Today I speak with an activist, ER resident, and founder of an intriguing budget travel company that can take you far off the beaten path. Listen in to learn more about today's fascinating guest, his path in medicine, and the journeys he can take you on. Welcome to the 254th episode of Admission Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. This podcast is brought to you by today's webinar, Create a Winning MCAS Application, and in which we'll walk you through the multiple parts of the MCAS application and provide proven strategies and tactics for you to produce a winning one. You can register at accepted.com/winmcas, that's WINAMCAS. The webinar is free, and again, it's today, but you do need to register, so do so ASAP. And it's at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. So if you're listening to the webinar today, you can catch it. I have to start the podcast today with a warning. Our guest today has done so much that it's going to be really difficult to give his background succinctly, but I'll do my best. Dr. Calvin Sun earned his bachelor's in 2008 at Columbia, where he held numerous leadership positions. In 2014, he graduated from SUNY Downstate College of Medicine and served as the graduating class president. Since 2014, he's been an ER resident at Montefiore and Jacoby Medical Centers and is also the director of resident wellness at Jacoby. In his non-existent spare time in medical school, he somehow managed to found and now runs the Monsoon Diaries, which he describes as a blog-turned-travel company. The Monsoon Diaries organizes flexible budget trips and has gone to over 128 countries in the past 6 years. He is also a filmmaker, popular speaker, and activist in the Asian American community. Calvin, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you for having me, Linda.
My pleasure. Can you tell us about your background, where you grew up, how you got interested in medicine and travel for that matter? But we'll get to travel more later.
Sure. I was born and raised in New York City in Manhattan, New York. Okay. And I was lucky to have parents that raised me in an environment where I was constantly learning and growing. But in the interim of my youth, my father passed from a sudden heart attack and my mom got sick of Parkinson's. So I ended up like deciding and determining my own path for myself at an earlier age than most other people, unexpectedly. And that led me on a path to medicine, which I thankfully believe that it was a decision I made on my own and not influenced by anyone else around me. And as you'll find out later, those of you who know me or have been on my trips know that my path to medicine has been very unconventional, especially with the Monsoon Diaries in the picture.
What is your path to medicine? That's a logical question after that answer. What has been?
Oh, it's very complicated. I guess the short answer would be my father wanted me to become a doctor, but then after he passed, I was free, if you will, in that confusion to decide for myself if I wanted to do medicine, and my mom gave her blessings to me to decide that question for myself. And I initially was, I rejected it actually for the first couple of years because I felt like it was something that he was forcing me to do. But ultimately, the issue with overthinking and having a mind for yourself is you think about whether or not I was rejecting it because of my father. And realizing that if I really wanted to be truly free from anyone's influence, including my parents, and really determined that this is a decision that I was making for myself, then there was no way to know other than trying it for myself. And right, because if I rejected it, I don't know if I was signing away a life calling or I was meant to be a doctor because of my dad. And if I wanted to be truly free, I would decide for myself. And in that, I decided to try it out. And I applied to as many schools as I could. And didn't think I was going to get in anywhere because I was not a great student. I was very strong in extracurriculars, but my academic record was below average for admissions to medical school. And my hope was to just get all those rejection letters and check that box off and be free from the decision and knowing that I was not meant to become a doctor. That didn't turn out the way it did. I ended up was fortunate enough to get in. I think the medical schools were kind enough to see me as a human being rather than someone who reads from a book all the time and studies all the time, and they were trying, I guess, something new, a doctor that's a human being, someone that actually has life experiences to share and utilize in patient care. And I was very grateful for that the evolution of medicine towards something more humanistic and organic. And through that path, I met a lot of people who supported my unconventional approach to medicine. And then it was a series of those kind of, should I not? And then people supporting me and just being honest to myself and true to myself and not listening to other people how I should do something, but rather listening to people who encourage, do it my own way. So I traveled all the time. I never gave up on my things outside of medical school. And it was ironically, I guess, I know this is a long answer to this question, but ironically, it was all the things that almost got me flunked out of medical school, the extracurriculars, the things that prevented me from studying as hard as I could have, were they actually the things that got me into residency and becoming director of the of resident wellness. And now in my last 2 months of residency, if nothing else happens, I will be in the common attending this come July.
Wow. Pretty good. Now I noticed that you didn't go straight from college to medical school. Was that because you wanted to take a gap year or two, or was that because you had said, I don't want to be a doctor? And what did you do during that period? Did you find it helpful in choosing your path? And now that you obviously you've been practicing, or you've been a medical student and practicing medicine for the last 8 years, how did you come to decide that this is the correct path? I mean, did you try clinical experiences before medical school to kind of check your commitment, whether you are doing this for yourself, or did you actually have to enroll in medical school? That's a whole bunch of questions, I know.
I think it's a great question because, and I like that question because the best advice, I mean, the best advice I can give anyone is not to listen to anyone's advice but your own. I can only give guidance, but in terms of my own experiences. The second best advice I ever gave that I'm proud of is to recommend everyone taking a couple gap years, whether it's before college or after college. That was the best decision I ever made, was to take a few years off because the answer to those questions was I didn't know. And to say and to have the confidence to say I don't know is also an answer. It's a very valid answer.
It is.
If you don't know, that's fine. It's people are always very uncomfortable not having an answer. And I tell people to embrace that, right? It goes back to saying, you know, no one can really give you advice except for yourself. Only you know yourself best. And if you're saying, I don't know, maybe the only person who can really answer that is you after taking that time off, taking that break, like basically away from all the noise and distractions that we're so accustomed to growing up with all the next assignments, the next exams, the next essay, the next
the treadmill.
The treadmill. And then we live in a generation now where when we don't have those assignments or exams and we have free time, it's inundated with Facebook, Instagram, the next post, how many likes did I get, social media. We don't actually have a space where we have enough time to think to ourselves that is influenced by other external factors. So those 2 years off was my answer to the question of what am I supposed to do with my life? I don't know. And part of those 2 years, I did many odd jobs. I bartended. I did some entrepreneurship with my brother, my dad's company that my dad was running before he passed. I decided to get involved in it a little bit just to know how a company works. And also, I did do some clinical volunteering in a hospital in the ER just to see if I liked it. And ironically, I didn't like it. I remember doing it and then realizing, no, maybe this is not right for me because I'm not enjoying as much as I should have or expected to become a doctor. But then part of critical thinking, or my brain, I guess, thinks too much, is I actually asked why. The question why is so important. Why didn't I like it? And I didn't want to just give up on medicine because of the what, which was I didn't like it. I decided to continue with the medicine and apply to medical school because the answer to the question why I didn't like it was I wasn't doing enough. I felt stagnated just as a volunteer, that I wish I could have done more. I wish I could do more in as a volunteer in the ER. And in general, I did like what I was seeing. I just didn't like the fact that as a mere volunteer, there's only so much you can do. So knowing that question why, after it took me about a year of doing that to really realize that, I decided, and even that confusing, it wasn't like 100% like slam dunk answer, I decided to apply just to see. If I didn't get in, I could check that box off and know that was not meant for me, but that didn't happen. And that was the biggest, I think the biggest risk is to take no risks at all. So, you know, there's only one way to find out was just to do it. And among other activities, that's when I first started traveling. The year right before I started medical school in 2010 of May, so about a couple months before I was supposed to matriculate, I still wasn't sure if I should just go through med school. that's when I went to go traveling for the first time alone, and that's when
Where'd
the
you go?
Monsoon Diaries started.
Where'd you go?
So originally it was to Egypt in the winter of 2010, and I went because I lost a bet to a few friends. They were all going to Egypt at the same time, and they were trying to get me to go. And we were out, socializing, and I was like, "No, I don't like to travel. Travel, what's the point? I'm from New York City. The whole world comes to me anyway. Why spend so much money to go to places you're not going to live in anyway? New York City, that's where I was born and raised.
Center of
Why
the
go anywhere
world.
else?" Yep. And it's a very New Yorker attitude. And my friends rolled their eyes and they tried to get me to go. And I, as a joke, I said, "I'll go if tickets under $700," knowing that the tickets were like 2,000, 3,000 round trip at the time, because they were leaving the next day. It was a joke.
Oh,
Yeah. And over the course of the evening, we were tracking the flights as a joke, just like, refresh, hit refresh again, sure. And then it was 2,000 or 1,500, something ridiculous that I could not afford. And then right as we paid our tab and got up and left, it went down to $650.
oh,
And yeah, I lost the bet. I'm a man of my word. And I got the, I mean, it's a great deal too, so I didn't want to pass up on it. And then I ended up getting the flights. They left a few hours before I did. I came in a few hours, a day later, but they picked me up at the airport. And then plans changed. That's the nature of travel. When I thought I was going to be with them for 3 to 4 weeks, they ended up saying, "Hey, we realize why your tickets are so cheap. Things are going down." I mean, it was the winter of 2010 in Egypt.
That's when that
And
was right before this, the Arab Spring, right?
it was like right before things were getting dodgy. I mean, it wasn't like the middle of the worst part, but it was things were getting dodgy and plans changed, flights changed, and then things, expectations changed, and that's the nature of travel. And eventually I realized once I got there, yeah, I was stranded in Egypt by myself for 3 or 4 weeks,
Wow.
and not prepared, and to prepare for that. And to make a long story short, I mean, this is a very long story, and I know we have more questions, but
Right.
first week I hated it. The second week, yeah, the first week I was like, "I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die. I don't know what I'm doing. I shouldn't be leaving. I should be leaving." The second week I was like, "Huh, I'm getting the hang of this." It was not until 3 weeks in I was like, "Oh, I get it. I get this is why people travel, because for the first time in 3 weeks, it's like the break, taking that 2 to 3 years gap years I gave. This was the first time ever where I was had no internet. I was by myself. I had no internet. I didn't know about anybody. Nobody knew me. I could not understand the billboards or the TV commercials or anything in media because I don't speak the language. I can't read Arabic. And when was the last time we all had that experience when we were completely by ourselves in a place where the only person we could talk to was ourselves? And that's when I started becoming my own best friend, starting to love myself, rely on myself, really realizing who I truly was. And then from there, when I came back, I decided to quit all my jobs and travel for 3 to 4 or 5 months before medical school.
Wow, that's quite a story. That's great. We'll get back to your travels in a minute. All right, so you started medical school and you were at SUNY Downstate. What did you like best about your medical school experience?
I loved how SUNY Downstate, just for accepting me in the first place, they saw me for a human being. They didn't look at, I mean, I admit that my academic record is very questionable. I mean, I was a very good student up until my father's death. It was a very stressful time. It's another story in itself. But just, let's just say that I was distracted. I had no personal motivation. It was when your father suddenly dies of a heart attack, you didn't expect it, an hour before it happened, and you had to rearrange your entire life, especially if he was the sole breadwinner of the family, and your mom getting Parkinson's, diagnosed a few weeks later, and having to take care of her and try to figure out a path where you can,
Oh my God,
have to
it was
take care
like
of
within a
yourself.
few weeks of each other? Wow.
Yeah, it was a double whammy. Yeah, it was just like, what is going on with my life? Yeah. And I mean, we all knew that she was developing symptoms and signs, but it wasn't like a full-blown thing until, I guess, the trauma of my father's death just had all that come
Sure.
out. I mean, I really do believe mental health is a very important part of physical health. And that's a really good example of my mom just like saying, "I'm not in a position to take care of you. You have to take care of yourself," and me figuring that out. So let's just say that after that, my grades went on a nosedive. And usually when you're applying to medical school, you want your grades to improve over time. Especially if you're not a good student, you want to show them that you're getting better. I was a pretty good student, but I was getting worse. And I graduated not having that upward curve in my grades. It was ended on a lower note. And when I took the NCATs a few months later, I did not do that great. I was kind of below average. And as an Asian American, it's very tough for people in my community to present their academic in a below average scale compared to others.
Did you take the MCAT?
I did. I took the MCATs a few months after graduating.
So you retook them and raised your score, or it was?
No, I didn't retake them. I took them once, and I actually, that was part of the checking the box off. I took them once, got my score, was disappointed, and that was leading me on the path. I was like, okay, I think I'm not meant to be a doctor. I'm about to check that box off and know and be free from this decision whether or not I should be a doctor and just live my life in no regrets, knowing that I was not meant to be this clinician that my father wanted to be. But I still kept trying, just to see what would happen. And you don't really know until you hit the end of the road. And for me, that luckily, I guess, didn't happen.
By the way, my father passed away very suddenly also, but I was much older. Oh. I was already a grandmother at the time. So, you know, it was...
That must have been still difficult, though.
It was a shock. Something like that. It was a shock. It was like...
Especially if it's sudden and you didn't expect it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I can certainly relate to that part of it. I mean, I was well into my... 50, no, I wasn't, I was around 50. And I realized that I was privileged to have had him for that length of time, but it was an incredible shock. He'd been healthy. There'd been no warning.
But there's no how-to guide. You can be in your 50s, you can be in your 20s, you can be in your 30s, 10s, or teens, or not know.
Yeah.
Everyone goes through that journey and has to, and finds, and learns a little more about themselves through something as sudden as that. These are traumas in our lives that define us.
Oh, yes.
And that must have been really difficult for you in a different way, but also in a similar way. I mean,
this obviously isn't the subject of the podcast. There were two thoughts, I think, that really helped me at the time. And obviously one would not have been helpful to you. I don't think you could have said that. But one was the idea that I realized I'd been privileged to have him as long as I'd had him. And the other one was... that I knew that while it's an enormous shock and was very difficult for me, my sister, my mother, and our family, there was no suffering, and that was a blessing. So those were the two things that I took comfort from at the time.
But no, that's good to hear.
Let's move to happier topics. you obviously enjoyed your experience at Downstate, and I guess it did end up confirming for you that medicine is the right path for you. What would you have liked to have had improved at SUNY Downstate?
I was in a fortunate position. I was, you know, fortunate enough to be elected as class president my first year, and to be one of the only ones at the time. I mean, I was told that there wasn't have been no others to have been reelected for the permanent class president position at the end of first year. They always change usually because people burn out or people get disillusioned or the class gets to know each other better. But I was fortunate enough to actually have all 4 years as class president.
Wow, I didn't
and
realize
given that.
That.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't want to brag, but that's like, that's it makes a
impressive.
Huge difference. When,
it's fact. It's not bragging.
Thank you. Yeah, it makes a huge difference having to change administrations and scopes in the middle of first year to second year. You have different, but I set an agenda in my first years to improve SUNY Downstate the best as I could. And being reelected gave me that validation to the school, or delivered that validation to the school, that my agenda was something that my class really supported. And whatever I wanted to improve at SUNY Downstate, I was happy to implement them. I mean, the only thing I didn't get to do, implement that I wanted to improve in Downstate, really, at the end of the day, were superficial things. Like we wanted to change our graduation caps from a mortarboard to the cap, which doesn't really matter. Like, I didn't care when they said, like, actually, we already signed a contract for that. And that was already fourth year. I was about to graduate in 3 months. And I was like, all right, that's not a fight worth. But that was it. That was really it.
Oh, that's and the right. colors that's of our wonderful. Graduation
yeah,
what a wonderful endorsement.
Yeah, that was it. Now, everything else, we wanted Wi-Fi in the lecture hall so we can look up stuff. That got passed and implemented by our second year. We wanted to be able to have food and drink in library spaces so people didn't have to walk about like half a mile to the other side of campus for the nearest place to eat when they're in the middle of studying for the exams. It's very inconvenient.
Especially if it's raining or snowing or something like that.
Exactly. So we had a food and drink area in the library. There was a block that where it was notorious for failing, 20%, 30% of the class. And SUNY Downstate is very difficult, where if you fail once, you can only fail one more thing, just an exam, before you have to remediate the entire year. Or you lose your entire summer to have to remediate. And that's like changes a big deal because it adds onto your tuition. It changes your whole trajectory of becoming a doctor. It ends up on your academic record. It makes it harder for you to apply residency. So this block was notorious. So we made an effort. We called it at the time there was Occupy Wall Street. So we called it Occupy Hematology Oncology block. And we got the exam. We basically were the first class where our administrations, my student council, and the student liaison committee worked together to get the quiz thrown out or add 20 points to everyone's quiz so that it was more fair to the rest of the class and no one had to be in danger of failing out that year. I didn't want a graduate class where half the group couldn't finish just because of one test
Sure.
or one quiz, really. So that was just a few examples of what we were able to accomplish
Sounds
and
like they
just
were very
all the
responsive.
effort. Yeah, I mean, we and the thank you. And it's just I'm very lucky to have a class that was responsive to my efforts because it's very easy to have a disillusioned class who doesn't believe in student government, which I'm was very much aware of throughout my academics since high school or college. But I've definitely seen student government work. I mean, I was class vice president in Columbia in my undergrad years, and we were able to accomplish quite a few things during, especially during the hunger strike 2008. And so I was able to carry those experiences forward, and I was lucky enough to have a class to be very responsive to it.
Now, today you are an ER resident at a two very busy New York City hospitals. How did you come to select emergency medicine? What appealed to you about it?
I will give you the same answer that I gave during my interviews.
Okay.
And I'll explain the thought process of them when they asked me, why do you want to do emergency medicine? And they some of them, many of them, added on the sentence, because your academic record during college and medical school isn't quite stellar. It's actually it's concerning. It sounds like you have other activities that may have distracted you from medical school, so it gives us pause in your application. And I totally understand that. We invited you because you have great recommendation letters and you as a person have the clinical knowledge, but on paper, as a test taker, we totally get it. Some people just know their material but cannot take tests as well. Maybe that's you. But we need to see for yourself, why do you really want to be an ER doctor with all the other things on your plate that may have prevented you from doing better on the test taking, right? The traveling, the student activism, student government. And I said I was a bartender, right? I never gave that up throughout med school. I needed to pay for med school somehow, right? So in response to your answer, in response to your question and that question a few years back when I was applying, I told them the truth. And when you're, because when you're applying to any job or any school, tell the truth. Because you don't want to, if you fake your answer or try to be a different person and they accept you for being that different person or giving that fake answer, you're going to have to be that fake person the next 4 years to find the happiness. If you give the honest answer and not get the job or get the answer, then it's fine. I mean, they don't take you. That should be a sigh of relief rather than feeling rejected because they are missing out. They are missing out on the honest you, and you don't. It's their loss. You don't want to be working as a trying pretending to be someone else, right? If they take you for your honest answer, then you know that you can be yourself
Right.
at the job on the right plane.
Somebody else
So
has
my
already
answer
been
was,
taken
sorry.
too.
So my answer was, why do I become an ER doctor? Because it's the closest thing to bartending I could think of. They're like,
And
what do you mean by
could you
that?
flesh out that analogy, please?
I was actually very scared of giving this answer. But when you're in doubt, tell the truth.
Sounds
Actually, just
good.
tell the truth all the time if you can, but
Right.
with tact and discretion. But tell the truth. And I was very tactful about it. Like, I was like, I did explain it. I mean, they did furrow their eyebrows and they're like, what do you mean by that? And I was like,
Yeah,
think
that's
about
kind
it.
of right, my follow-up question too.
Yeah, think about it. You're as an ER doctor, you're behind this kind of bar,
Yeah.
right? As same thing as a bartender. You're behind a bar. You're very accustomed to telling patients or your customers at a bar, please do not step behind that line. You get don't get behind my bar. So we have the similar attitudes about this is our space. We secure our space so we can take care of other people. We don't know who's going to come in. We have the same kind of patients or end customers, right? We don't, the drunks, the angry, the depressed, the people going through a very tough time in their lives. Everyone's worst day of their lives is every day of our lives. We get similar patrons, and you have to move at at similar paces. You have to move as fast as possible without disrespecting the person you're serving. You want to make people love you in the 5, 10 minutes you have with them before you move on. you have to have a certain pace. You don't want to move too slowly because there's so many other people waiting for you, and you want to move too fast either for that reason. And essentially, you develop the same kind of skill set of trying to, it's customer service, making people feel comfortable. Most people, and this is the kind of belief I have as a doctor, in that we're not really there to quote unquote save lives and fix diseases. I mean, that's all, you know, part of our expectations as clinicians. But ultimately, I believe personally, is to be there for people who are going through the worst times of their lives, just to be there, to be able to understand something about a process that they are not familiar with and be able to explain to them. They're not necessarily looking for a cure all the time. They just want to understand what's going on. And I found myself doing a lot of that as a bartender, especially for a lot of, you know, my patrons who were going through a tough time and, you know, were there for different reasons. As a similar as an ER doctor, I'm not here to, as an ER doctor, you're not there to fix everything or diagnose everything. You can't do that much. You can only do so much in the ER in the limited time that you have. You just want to stabilize so that they can get definitive care, or you want to fix the problems that can be fixed and send them home before they catch something. So I thought that was a very good overlap. And then ultimately, and then I finished up, it was like, you, the interviewer, the attending, you're like a bar manager. You have your residents do all the work, and you as a bar manager just walk around the bar, or the attendees walk around the ER, just making sure everything's okay and asking, you know, people in the ER or the bar, hey, how are you liking my bar? Hey, how are you liking the ER? Like, how's everything going? Like, everything's all right? Do you need this? Do you need that? Give this guy a Tylenol in the house before he goes. Give this guy a drink before he goes. Something like, very similar. And they said, a lot of them said that was the best damn answer they ever heard to that question.
That's a great answer. Okay. Now, you had a lot about doubts about your path in medicine before you started medical school. Did you have any periods or rotations since then where you really questioned whether it was the right path?
Is it during medical school or during residency?
Either.
During medical school, it's the treadmill is much more intense because there's homework, right? You don't really have the space to know whether it was the right path. So there weren't any certain rotations where I felt like, huh, I'm not meant to do this, because you were just so busy that you didn't have time to even think or reflect on your experiences. Mm-hmm. I was lucky that I started to travel and created the Monsoon Diaries during medical school. So I was able to actually have that space when I left the country for the week, whether it's for the weekend or for a few days. And in those moments, I was actually able to reinforce that this is what I wanted to do rather than have doubts. The only time I really, really had doubts was during the first year of residency, where I knew I was going in at a lower academic record achievement-wise, you know, lower scores, lower GPAs than my peers and my colleagues who got into the residency. I felt like everyone around me was smarter than I was, did better on tests than I did. And if you like put a normogram of all the dots of everyone's average scores, there would be one dot at the very bottom of the graph that just stuck out. And that would be me. I mean, that is a very much, I always was so very aware of the imposter syndrome, where the belief that you as a student believes that you got into the back door and everyone else is smarter than you, and someone's going to find you out one day, and you're just got to fake it until you make it. But you know, any minute someone's going to find you out and kick you out. So that the fact that belief that you don't belong there, but it's a imposter syndrome is a syndrome because everyone else around you also feels the same way. However, I really did feel like I got into the back door. Now, you know my story. I really did feel like I was in there and trying to. So during that, like, as the year went by, my first year of residency as an intern, things were working out. Like, you know, I was learning, but I didn't know why it was working out. I didn't know the medical knowledge behind a lot of the stuff I was doing. I mean, they seemed intuitively sense, but I wasn't able to recite the chemical processes, the biochemistry behind the reason, clinical reasoning I was doing. I was learning by osmosis. And I just felt like one of these days, you know, my luck is going to run out and something bad is going to happen. And I realized I was not meant to be. I'm grateful that I was managed to make it to all the way to the second year and still have a job, still have my resident position. And that's when I woke up one day and realized this is exactly what I want to do. I am so happy to be able to come home from something that makes me feel fulfilled every day. However, I don't want that for other people. And that, what I mean by that is I don't want people to wait that long all the way until their midpoint of residency to realize they want to be a doctor. I want people to be sure they want to be a doctor before they even apply, which is why I'm doing this, going public speaking at different medical schools and colleges to make sure people don't get fall into the trap that I did, where you're just so confused that you have to rely on bets and, you know, taking these risks to determine your path. And it could have turned out very differently for me. A lot of people say that I'm very lucky.
How would you recommend that somebody test whether medicine is the right path for them? Because the route you took was a very risky, kind of high-risk, high-reward, and expensive route, both financially and in terms of time.
Absolutely. I think the biggest risk you could take is not to take any risks at all. So that supported my rationale, what I was doing. And a lot of people would say I was very lucky, high risk, and you just happened to work out that this was the right job for you, but you were lucky and you just put on all this time. But what is luck? Luck is opportunity plus preparation.
Okay.
Right? I prepared, but I didn't sacrifice any of the things that made me happy. Right? I still traveled, and that could have been something I would do for the rest of my life as a main job. I still bartended, and I still did activism. Nonprofit work as a board of directors on a national nonprofit. And I didn't give up any of those things. So that was all preparation. And ironically, it was those activities that a lot of people felt like I was taking away from medical school was actually the thing that got me into it. So I was prepared and the right opportunities came along. And I'm grateful that I was taking a risk, but not giving up on the other things. Now, not everyone can do that. I recognize that. But it doesn't mean that nobody can do that either. To answer your question, how can people prevent that high risk, confusing aspect of what I had to do, which was take a risk and just hope to make the best of it. And I agree with you. I want people to know before they even apply is to take that time off, to put themselves in a space where they can become their own best friend again, to be removed from all the distractions of day-to-day life, all the routines, the next assignment, the next exam, the next test, and social media. What their friends are doing, what their friends are accomplishing without them, what their friends are doing that are, you know, that makes them feel intimidated or feel like they're not doing enough. They have to get rid of that. And unfortunately, we don't live in a world anymore where people can just take a walk in the woods or go camping somewhere an hour away. Because when you go camping an hour away, you'll still get cell signal. You'll still see a billboard for Coca-Cola. You'll still run into somebody who will ask you about your job and what you do, right? Because we're just so interconnected now in this, and none of that is a bad thing. It's just the way things are now, which is why I recommend traveling.
Many things, you know, you have pluses and they inevitably have negatives.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I recommend international travel. And the Monsoon Diaries was created as a way to create greater access for those who feel they don't have time and money to travel. There is a way to travel where you don't have to spend a lot of time and money. Go on weekends, and there are definitely flights that are hack fares that you can get for 200 round trip, 400 round trip around the world, or use miles to get free flights. And there are plenty of means to – there are different ways, and that's why I wanted to do for people to take them out of their routine to a place where they don't know anyone, nobody knows them, and then create that – develop that space as small or as large as it is to finally have a conversation with themselves.
Do you feel that developing – That developing that space is part of, I mean, you are the director of resident wellness, that it's part of medical student and resident wellness, having that space?
You're right. I think the biggest problem that most people have is communication, because we don't learn how to communicate. And that's whether with ourselves or our intimate partners or our friends or, you know, our superiors. It's very hard for us to be honest with our feelings and be able to verbalize them, our desires and our intentions, in a way that is healthy. A lot of us keep it to ourselves, thinking and worrying about what other people are thinking, and not really just bringing it out into the open. I think it's ironic. A lot of people are scared of talking to their intimate partners about certain topics, so they end up airing the dirty laundry with their friends, which is ironic because this is the love of their lives that they're worried about, and they should feel comfortable talking about anything with their loved ones. But that's an example. If they can't even do that with somebody else, how do you think they can do that with themselves? We are so afraid of being honest with our true feelings and how we feel about a certain situation. It's just, and that's not anything at fault for anyone. It's because we haven't been given the tools to even have those communication skills with ourselves. We don't even know how to even speak the language. Developing that space gives them the beginnings. The sandbox to be able to develop that language in the first place. The reason why we don't have that language is we don't have a space to learn that language. We never have a moment to ourselves to know more about ourselves, become our own best friends, which is why taking them out of that space is what I want to do. I mean, the other two is trauma. Like I think what both of us went through when our fathers passed suddenly, that was a space for us that we had to create to figure out, oh my God, like I did not expect this. Now what do I do? And then the path and the actions we took after that trauma allowed us to know ourselves better. And unfortunately, I don't wish trauma. We don't want trauma. I don't wish trauma anyone. Unfortunately, that's not a viable way to live, to wait for the next trauma. The next thing is meditation. Hardcore meditation, vows of silences, where you like meditate all the time. We don't have time. A lot of us don't have time for that. But we do take vacation. We are given vacation and breaks. We are given weekends. And I think traveling is a combination of something, a controlled kind of trauma, where you're taken out of a comfort zone in a place where you don't know anyone, like being stranded in Egypt for 3 weeks by yourself. And meditation. You're by yourself. Nobody knows you. You don't know anyone. And the only person who's talked to you is yourself. So it's a fun kind of meditation, if you will.
All right. Interesting perspective on it. Let's turn to the Monsoon Diaries. What is it and how did it come to be?
I would say primarily it is now a travel community. Originally, it was a travel blog, both of which have organically turned into, if you will, travel company, travel entrepreneurship, but totally by accident. It was something that I created as a blog originally to let my mom know I was okay because I would blog every day. And I credit to just being encouraged to write in a journal. And I've kept a journal/diary since I was 6 years old. I have all these black and white Mead like marble notebooks. And then it became online on Zanga for a few years. And then from Zanga, it turned into the Monsoon Diaries. And I would blog every day. And because I was so, I was very dedicated to it. I was very diligent. And I basically made that a priority. Because I was so dedicated to publishing every day to let everyone know I was okay, that work ethic allowed other people to tune in as if they were following something live, including my mom. Mm-hmm. And that developed a community. And the community read it, realizing that it was possible. Most travel bloggers, they blog for a little bit, and then there's a period of silence, and then they blog like a couple weeks later. And by that time, everyone knows they're okay. There's no drama. Everyone's like, fine. I would blog live. And over time, people were like, oh my God, this is so interesting. Like, what happens next? I would write things like, I missed my train, or I'm not at a bar, not knowing, I don't know anyone. What do I do? You know, things like just in the moment. And then people would respond back. It's like, this is so interesting. This is so crazy that you're doing this. And I feel like I'm in the same position as you. And I also blog like how much everything is and how I'm making it work. People felt like it was possible for them to do it. And unlike other travel bloggers who just do it themselves and make their community, jealous and feel like they're missing out, I was trying to make it more accessible, saying this is something that anyone else can do, but if you just do this. But I took an extra step further when people started asking, can I come along with you? Can I join you on this trip if I leave tomorrow and meet you here? Because I did what you said on your blog and I found flights that were like 200 one way to where you are, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Can I do it? And I would just say yes. And they would come and they would ask if they could bring their friends. And I just kept saying yes. And that's fine. Instead of just booking for myself, I'll just book for all of us. It's not that much more work. And then eventually they started bringing their friends and their friends about their friends. And it started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they started calling themselves Monsooners. Not me, they did. And then they started meeting up with one another around the world, traveling. Now they were traveling by themselves, feeling inspired. They would travel with me and split off. And then they would meet other people who would travel with me, and they started creating a community on their own. And they would send me photos of reunions out on the other side of the world when I wasn't there, and saying, calling themselves Monsooners based on my blog name.
Why Monsooners? I thought a monsoon is a major storm, usually in Asia.
Yeah, yeah. My blog was already called the Monsoon Diaries. And okay. I named it because the storm is the way I travel, right? It's a giant storm that covers a large surface area that comes, is intense, covers every single surface area you can imagine with the storm, and disappears. Okay. And everything's okay afterwards, right? I go in for a short amount of time, but I experience everything that is possible, and then I move on, just like a monsoon.
How do you choose your destinations?
Randomly. If I haven't been there, I will go. If it's on a bucket list, I will go next week. I don't believe in the concept. Like, I'll go eventually. The psychology of postponement is very real. Mm-hmm. And I want to avoid that. The whole idea is, I'll do this when I get a raise. I'll do this when I graduate. I'll do this when I – if you keep thinking like that, it's never going to happen. I will always say, if I want to do it, no postponement. I'm going to do it next week. So I would pick a place I'd never been to, and then I would announce it on my social media or my blog, saying, "These are the places I could go the next week. These are the flight prices. Who wants to come? Or where should I go?" And people would vote, and the one who wins the most votes, I go. And people who voted, or the people who wanted to go in the first place, so then I asked them, "So you voted for me to go? Do you want to come with me? You shouldn't just be the one voting. You should just come." And a lot of them are like, "Huh, you're right. I did vote for you to go, but that it's actually a personal expression of what I really want. Sure, why not?" And they actually ended up coming,
That's
and
great.
I took them with me.
I assume most of the people on your trips are young professionals or students.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them who first started out was young 20-something students, college students, med students, young professionals, first 2 years of their jobs, people who are a little disillusioned with, their life routines, the day-to-day life, and feeling there's something more, they want to do something more. A lot of them self-select themselves because the trips, the nature of my trips are very off the beaten path. Like our first few trips were Chernobyl, Iran, North Korea, and this is
Wow.
back in 2010, 2011. Things were much different back then. Egypt, the Middle East, things that most people wouldn't consider like vacation destinations.
Right.
And then people who choose those places in the first place were young 20 people, something people who were looking for something. So it's kind of self-selected a great community of people who are all united in some kind of transition period. And travel was a space for them to figure out the answers to their questions. And then it now is a much more all-inclusive, like more inclusive community where I have like 50-something, 60-something retirees or teachers,
Really?
all the way down to like fresh out of college or in the middle of freshman year of college. There's no exclusion criteria, if you will, unless the only exclusion criteria is can you handle our itineraries? And it's up
Right.
to you to decide.
I assume some of them are more, how should I say, more rustic, and some of them you stay at hotels and
I have this
or
combination of everything. Like the
yeah.
next week, next Friday, I'm going to Central Europe with Budapest, Vienna, Bratislava, and Slovakia. Like those are a little easier. And I have a 50-something fifth grade teacher coming, and I have five medical students and two young professionals who are, consultants, and I mean a bunch of others who are interested. So it's a wide range.
What are some of
And
your other upcoming trips?
I celebrate New Year's in Nauru, the least visited country in the world. It's a Pacific island in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
I haven't done Japan properly, so I can't really say I've done Japan unless I traveled all of it. So I have a September trip. I'm doing a relief work for only licensed medical professionals, so nurses, doctors in Haiti from May 22nd to May 29th in the only critical care hospital in Port-au-Prince. And Kuwait and Oman right afterwards from May 29th to June 3rd is a possibility. I want to do Armenia, Azerbaijan, and plenty of others. Afghanistan, Iraq is a long way away. And I haven't done West Africa properly, so that's also in the planning stages.
On your
So if I
list.
haven't been to it, that's the plan,
Got it.
essentially. But I always go to, I always say I don't go to the same place twice, just because there's so much of the world to see before I can go back to it. It's kind of like a buffet. But I've been going back to places now that I'm running out of places to go for the first time. So I'm going back to Vienna. I'm going to Budapest. So don't think that once I go there, I won't go back again. It all depends on the
That's a
people.
beautiful city. I've been there. It is a gorgeous city. What was the most beautiful place you visited, or do you have a favorite trip?
Oh, that's a hard question.
Well,
The
what's your
answer is
favorite
actually
child,
going to
right?
favorite among my children. So I would say the most fascinating place for me politically and culturally and for me personally, where I just felt like I was ways away from home, was North Korea and Myanmar in 2011. This is 2011 era. I know those two countries are very different now than they were in 2011. So I think that people should travel responsibly, so that decision making be different now. As for natural beauty wise, it would be Antarctica or Namibia.
Really?
Yeah, and the most fun I would say is Cuba. The most underrated that I just went to was Slovenia. And the country I go back to over and over and over and over again, the one that I break all the rules for, is India or the South Asian subcontinent. So India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka. And the most recent one that I feel is climbing the charts is New Zealand. I just got back from there, and so many life people, all the people who went on that life, their lives changed. All the people who went on that trip, their lives completely changed for the better.
How
in
so?
dramatic ways. I don't know. It's a good thing to say, but I want people to take this in a positive way. It's like quitting a job that never loved you back. So some people quit their jobs and found better ones. Two people broke up with their partners of 4 to 6 years, two of them, and one broke up with her fiance of 3 years. And a lot of people like look at that, I was like, that's terrible. But I would see it as more like, no, you don't know unless you traveled with us. And to hear the things they were saying about their relationships, they were not communicating with themselves before the trip. They were in something where they knew something was wrong, but were too, they didn't know themselves. They weren't having developed the language to own face up to the reality of the situation was they were in something that wasn't challenging them anymore. They were the partners that didn't want to be with them in terms of this trip, didn't really see eye to eye. I mean, it was used to be really good, but I guess people grow grow apart over time, but they didn't want to break up because of that all that investment, the sunk cost fallacy. I invested so much in this, and this
Of
person's
course.
invested so much in
Yeah.
this. I
Look,
should stay
there's
in this
no
relationship.
question it's better to break up before you get married than after.
Exactly. So all three of them happened to, and I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything. But all three of them being the same trip and doing a road trip through New Zealand, they were communicating with each other. They became each other's mirrors, and they were all each giving each other advice, the same advice they couldn't take for themselves. But because there were three of them giving each other the same exact advice that they wanted for the other person, it ended up working out for themselves when they came back, and they are much happier now.
Okay.
So when we have our reunions. We just had a reunion actually, and I had to confirm everyone because I felt bad. I was like, "Oh my God, there's so many breakups." I wanted to make sure I didn't like ruin anyone's lives, but that's actually the opposite happened. It was just not the case.
Okay. What would you have liked me to ask you? I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
I mean, I guess to finish up with the question of how the Monsoon Diaries came about.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just I think that when the community created itself and called themselves Monsooners. I was very touched that I created something accidental or actually, yeah, something that I did not want to do, which was travel. Something that I had to be dragged kicking and screaming for 3 weeks to
Yeah.
appreciate, which is travel in Egypt.
Yeah.
Somehow now I am seen and I'm blessed to be perceived as the person that makes travel accessible for others who already want to travel. Who didn't need 3 weeks of being stranded in the country by themselves, freaking out all the time, to appreciate? And I look at them and I say, "You don't need me. Like you already want to do something that it took me 3 weeks." So I feel like I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm not the right person to be doing this. I feel I'm the one that's supposed to be learning from you. But ironically, I'm now in a position where people look to me as someone to get them out of their routine day-to-day life. I always ask when the next trip is, or when am I taking them on the next trip? And when they call themselves Monsooners, and I guess respect and you know homage to my blog name, I was very touched how they saw a value in something that I just you know wanted to create to let my mom know I was okay. The blog, you know, and so when that happened, people were like, "No, this is something that you need to keep going," you know, and because your role in people's lives is much greater than you could imagine. And this, you think you're just traveling for fun and, you know, doing this for yourself, but really indirectly you are changing people's lives and you need to make this a thing. So that's why it's an accidental travel company. This is something that they created and I was lucky enough to be trusted to take on the position of leading it.
Oh, you were the
And right
catalyst.
now, I guess so. I'm the unwitting and accidental catalyst.
But it's interesting. I mean, initially you were very resistant to the idea of going into medicine. You decided to try it, and ultimately you realized it was your calling. You were resistant to going traveling. You tried it on a dare or a bet, and you found you loved it, and it gave you the space you needed to reflect and to decide what is your calling. And it ends up being pretty much medicine and travel. And
One
I
could not
suspect you're
exist
going to
without.
find that pattern again in your life.
Yeah, I mean, one could not exist without the other. I the medicine and travel. I really do believe that everyone grows up with an idea of what they want to have. But let's say if everything went according to plan, like everything you planned out went exactly how you imagined to be. I mean, for a minority, a few of us, that's nice. But for a majority of us, that's not what it is to live life. Life is all about surprises and spontaneity. It is the spontaneity and surprises in life that makes it so interesting. I think we should embrace the fact that we're all designed to be innately dissatisfied with things, because if there's no desire, there's no motivation, there's no ambition, there's no motivation to improve upon your society, to create progress, right?
Right.
Whether it's for yourself or other people. So for me to say, I'm going to be a doctor, or I'm going to travel, and have that turn out completely the way it's supposed to, I don't think I would become satisfied with that story. I'm grateful to look back and realize that everything I ever believed and I thought was true was wrong. And that's okay, because I now have the language to question and critically analyze things in my life in a way that is an honest form of communication. I mean, I'm lucky to have that happen earlier in my life, and I really wish that upon others. I think because I have the communication with myself, I got to know myself, that self-love, self-forgiveness, self-care, I have enough of it now that I can give that energy to others without feeling like I've sacrificed anything, without taking away from my own personal health. And giving that to others, I want to take that energy and have them pass it on to others by creating that space for themselves to know themselves better, so they can live the life that they're meant to live rather than a life that they're expected to live by external influences like parents or society. So
that's a wonderful gift. Absolutely wonderful gift. Calvin, I think we're just about out of time. Where can listeners find you online, learn more about Monsoon Diaries, and perhaps go in a direction and place they never ever thought of?
You can just Google me, The Monsoon Diaries, Calvin Sun, The Monsoon Diaries Travel. If you want to just go directly to my website, it'll be monsoondiaries.com, just like the words, MonsoonDiaries.com. And the instructions are there, self-evident, and you just click on upcoming trips, or you can just email me at Calvin, like Calvin Klein, Calvin Hobbs, just my first name, Calvin, @monsoondiaries.com. And I am very responsive to everything. And finally, the best way, people always ask, like, oh, there's so many ways to contact you. If you have to choose one, Facebook is my best go-to response, the social media platform. Just send me a message on facebook.com/monsoondiaries or facebook.com/CalvinDSun, my name. And I'll respond within 24 hours, 12 hours more likely. And you just go on my next trip. And it's pretty much, you don't have to do anything. You just have to sign up. We work together in getting your flights, and all you got to do is show up.
All right. We'll provide those links in the show notes at exhibit.com/254. Listener, thank you too for joining Dr. Calvin Sun and me for Admission Straight Talk's 254th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk and the Monsoon Diaries. And a last reminder from today's sponsor, the webinar Create a Winning MCAS application. You can register today for free at exhibit.com/winmcas. Do it now so you don't forget and miss out. The webinar is today, April 10th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.